Thank you. Be seated.
If there's enough chairs for the spectators.
The court is ready to hear argument from Relator in River Center Associates versus Honorable Rivera.
May I please the court? Mr. Thomas Pickford will present argument for Relator.
I would say good morning, but it's not. It's afternoon. I apologize for impinging on the lunch hour.
We did it to ourselves.
My name is Tom Pickford. I'm here on behalf of River Center Associates, the Relator, in an original mandamus proceeding brought against the Honorable Raul Rivera, District Court Judge, Bexar County, Texas. There are three questions this court needs to answer in this case. First question is whether or not the state of Texas is going to recognize a contractual jury waiver entered into by parties to a contract prior to the institution of litigation. The second question is whether or not the Honorable Raul Rivera abused his discretion when he denied River Center Associates a motion to quash jury demand based upon a contractual jury waiver clause contained in a commercial lease agreement and surety of lease. The third issue presented to this court is whether or not mandamus is appropriate in this particular case for relief. I'll answer the third one. Well, all three should be answered affirmatively. It is the position of the relator in this case. I'll go to the third question first, and that is whether or not mandamus is appropriate. It is our position that mandamus is appropriate, that this court wrote on almost an identical issue in the case of Anglin versus Tips in November of 1992.
Of course, that case involved arbitration.
It did indeed.
Here you're going to have a trial anyway under the same rules of procedure.
That
same
is
discovery
true.
Rule. Aren't we really talking about opening statement of a, choosing the board eye really, and maybe the opening and closing being a little shorter in a jury trial?
No.
I mean, being a little longer in a jury trial?
Indeed, yes. We are talking about the fact that jury trial is a little bit longer.
I'm just
in some cases, it's substantially longer.
But I'm talking about irreparable harm versus arbitration, where you have a whole different set of rules, presumably a whole lot cheaper, and the difference between a non-jury and a jury trial. Why aren't you just getting a free bite at the apple if you're right on the law?
I don't see the difference, though, because an arbitration agreement waives the right to a jury trial, just as this clause waives the right
I'm
to
not
a
talking
jury
about the
trial.
Law. I'm saying, assuming you're right on number one, on point one, why have you shown irreparable harm by having to go through the extra effort of picking a jury? That's really it. Picking a jury, there may be a little bit more explanation.
The irreparable harm comes from the fact that my client is being denied the right that it has contracted for.
Oh, but you're not. If you lose the trial and you're right about number one, you couldn't say it was harmless error, could you? I mean, would they say that?
Well, I don't know. Would they say that in the state of Texas? We don't know the answer to that, and I think you can argue, and it would be argued, that it is harmless error because the fact finder is presumed the fact finder, if it were a jury, it would be argued that that fact finder would have come to the same conclusions that the fact finder as a judge would have come to. So we are harmed irreparably. In other words, absent mandamus.
Would you repeat that?
I'm sorry.
Would you repeat that? Why would you be harmed?
We are harmed because our relief on appeal would be illusory, just as it's stated in the Anglin case. I'm just speculating because it hasn't happened yet, but the argument on appeal against my client, should we lose the jury trial, and I appeal that point, is that, well, Mr. Pickford, that's harmless error because the fact finder presumptively didn't make a difference. Be it a jury or a judge, they would have found the same facts. And then my client would have lost the benefit of the bargain for contractual jury waiver clause. So I believe Anglin is on point. I believe it's difficult to distinguish Anglin from the case at hand, and that mandamus is appropriate in this case. The next issue is whether or not the enforceability of a jury waiver clause in a contract prior to the institution of litigation should be recognized in Texas. And I think that question should be reversed. And the question should be, why shouldn't it be recognized? There is no reason.
When you use the term recognize these jury waiver clauses, you are indicating, I gather by the way you're posing the issue, that no Texas court has ever held that one can contract away a right to trial by jury guaranteed not once but twice in the Texas Constitution.
I have found no Texas case that has found that prior to the institution of litigation, one can waive that right by contract. I have found no case on it saying it's prohibited or allowed one way or the other. And we have cited in our brief case law to numerous other jurisdictions, virtually all other jurisdictions, which have said there's no problem, despite the fact that they have state constitutional provisions allowing jury trials.
Isn't it rather clear that the Texas right to trial by jury in many contexts is unique in our state and much broader than it is in other states? And isn't it so constitutionally guaranteed?
I would disagree with that, because the Massachusetts Bill of Rights, and as I recall, it's the Massachusetts Bill of Rights, uses the same language, that a jury trial in that state is inviolate. And
does
yet
it have
they
a separate
recognize
guarantee,
a contractual waiver.
Does it have a separate guarantee in its judiciary article extending the guarantee?
I do not know the answer to that question.
Pickford, we unanimously held that there's no constitutional impediment to the enforcement of contractual arbitration provision, which is tantamount to a denial of a jury trial. I believe you cited Anglin for a different proposition, but that's the practical effect of Anglin, isn't it?
That's correct. The practical effect of all the arbitration cases is that this court has recognized and allowed the waiver of a jury trial by way of an arbitration clause.
Do you see,
we see very little difference.
Do you see any problem with such a clause in a consumer contract, or such a clause waiving personal injury in the event of jury trial in the event of a personal injury that you might suffer by virtue of using the gas company?
I think the issue there needs to be resolved by basic contract law applications, and that is whether or not there was an overreaching, whether or not it's an adhesion contract, whether or not it's boilerplate language that is reduced in type so that you can only read it with a magnifying glass. I think that you resolve each and every one of those on that basis. We don't have that problem here.
And so long as you meet those requirements under your interpretation, jury trial can be contracted away.
Yes, sir.
So as long as I put the denial of the right to trial by jury in conspicuous terms in my insurance contract, basically a jury trial's out the window for every insurance contract case in the state.
Well, you know, when you get into insurance contracts, you're talking a whole different body of law where you've got the dealing with good faith and fair dealing, and the interpretations of insurance contracts has been treated substantially differently than, say, just a regular, ordinary consumer contract, or in this case, what we're talking about is a commercial lease agreement.
Well, the State Bar Journal article that you rely on in your brief is really about deceptive practices cases. So you don't see any problem, as long as it's conspicuous, in denying the right to trial by jury in a deceptive practices case in any kind of purchase of consumer goods or services, do you? Under your standards?
To the extent that it arises out of the same contract and the specific to the contract, there's no prohibition in the Deceptive Trade Practices Act on having a waiver clause such as this. A jury trial is not guaranteed in the DTTA.
So you see no barrier as long as it's conspicuous and including in every service contract in the state?
A contractual waiver of the right to trial by jury.
So long, I think the rule is, so long as you show a voluntary relinquishment, no right, and if you properly prove up that contract, it is my position that the burden is then upon the person objecting to the waiver to bring forth evidence why they did not voluntarily relinquish that known right.
So really what you're advocating is a fairly broad statement of the law that would have the potential of rather substantially reducing the number of jury trials in the state.
Potentially, yes, sir.
And that is in part because, as you argue in your brief, juries are really a lot of trouble and cost. You cite several studies to that effect.
Well, I don't say that they're a lot of trouble. I say that they are more expensive. Jury trials are more expensive than non-jury trials. They are less efficient time-wise. You cannot get a resolution of your dispute as quickly with a jury trial as you can with a non-jury trial under the present state of jurisprudence in the state of Texas.
I'm sorry. Basically, the same kind of arguments made by the competitiveness council in its recent report on trial by jury.
I have not read that report. I do not know.
This appears to be a lengthy contract with strikeouts and interlineations and initialing. Can you tell us a little bit about, given the concerns that have been expressed by about contracts, adhesion, and other non-negotiated contracts, can you tell us what the circumstances of the execution of this contract were?
This is a commercial lease agreement. The record in this case establishes that the defendant in the underlying case, Les Robbins, in his past as president, signed the contract. He signed that contract on the same date that he signed the surety of the lease. The record also indicates that the specific provision, which I believe is on page 42 of the contract, is of the exact same type size as all the other provisions in the contract. It contains a strikeout with the inclusion of the word non-compulsory in front of the word counterclaim in the exact same paragraph, initialed by the defendant, Les Robbins. I mean, that evidence in and of itself established some evidence of a voluntary, knowing relinquishment of this right.
How does the whole clause read now, then, with that change?
That change did not affect the jury waiver provision.
Okay.
It affected their rights to bring counterclaims in any suits brought by the lessor in that case.
But there is a counterclaim in this suit.
There is a counterclaim for deceptive trade practices, as I recall.
Now, is it clear that the waiver waives the counterclaim? So that's my last one.
I believe that it is. The counterclaim is incident to the negotiation, execution, and performance of the contract, and that this waiver clause is broad enough to encompass that counterclaim. Now, they have argued that, well, yeah, the one in the lease is broad enough, but the one in the surety of the lease isn't broad enough. I disagree, number one, with that proposition. But number two, it's irrelevant because the lease and the surety of the lease are one contract. They were executed contemporaneously with one another. And pursuant to the authority which I provided the court this morning, and I apologize, but the Jim Walter Holmes case, this court held that an agreement will be construed when you bring all of its parts together. Along with that authority is a Massachusetts case, Chase versus Owen, where they said we have a note, we have a guarantee, the waiver of jury trials in the note, it's not in the guarantee, but because they were executed contemporaneously with one another, the guarantors are subject to the jury waiver clause in the note. So it's not an issue. We've got one contract. Both jury waiver clauses are equally applicable to the tenant, in this case, All Ashore Incorporated, and the surety, Les Robbins, who is president of that corporation.
As for waiver, does it make any difference that you moved to set this case for a jury trial yourself?
They have argued, and that's exactly right, that's all that was a notice of setting. They have argued that that was tantamount to a jury demand. I'm sorry, I have to defer to you. I read that in light of the local rules, which I provided to you for Bexar County, Texas. And all that is a notice of a date for a trial on the merits. That's it. It is not a jury demand. It does not pay a jury fee. If you took that document by itself, put it out here and say, well, they didn't file a jury demand and they didn't file a jury fee, would that document allow for a jury, would that document bring into the right to have a jury trial? I don't think it would. I don't think it can.
We have a copy of that in the record.
We do. How promptly can you secure a non-jury setting in Bexar County these days, or at the time this we're concerned with, as compared to a jury setting?
In Bexar County, jury settings, it's my recollection, unfortunately, I'm not doing enough work over there. I'm doing too much school law. But it's at least a one-year wait on a jury trial. A non-jury, you can get a setting within the time frame allowed by the rules of civil procedure.
45 days.
That's correct. There's a case that I do want to bring to y'all's attention that I think is important. It's the Sixth Court of Appeals case, which has been cited in the briefs. It's KMC Company versus Irving Trust. In this particular case, there was a jury waiver. But they found in this case that it was not knowing or voluntary. The reasoning in this case on the burden of proof, I think, is extremely instructive and very, very helpful. Specifically, they did quote from Moore on federal practice, and they said, in determining whether to give effect to the contractual waiver against an objecting party, the objecting party being, in this case, Hollishore, the court should start with the presumption in favor of validity of the interest of liberty of contract. This would require the objecting party to point to some one or more matters that render the provision improper. In other words, once I proved up the contract, the burden was on the objecting party to set aside the jury waiver provision.
Any other questions? Thank you. The court is ready to hear arguments from the spot.
Joe Chris Lopez and Mr. Jay Neal will present argument for respondent. Ms. Lopez will open for the first 10 minutes.
May it please the court. Justice Doggett, I think your question about waiver hit the nail on the head. The fact that Relator filed its own jury request, its own request for a trial on the jury docket and requested a jury, I think that those issues are the issue that is before the court today.
Could it have gotten one without paying the $10?
The jury demand, Justice Heck, is on Appendix 1 to my brief, and it is styled Motion to Set on the Jury Docket.
Could it have gotten one without paying the $10?
Well, it says the $10 jury fee has already been paid by the defendants, so they acquiesced in the defendant's payment of that jury fee in order to secure their own jury trial.
But I guess the answer is it could not have gotten one without paying the $10.
Yes, sir, you're correct. Right. If the jury fee had not been paid by the defendant, you're right.
That document alone wouldn't do it.
This document alone would not do it. The question, though, is, and I invite you to look at the jury demand that they filed in this case. It is styled, as I said, Motion to Set on the Jury Docket. River Center comes before the court and requests that the court be set on the jury calendar, and they acquiesce in the fee that has been paid by the defendants.
Could they have set it on the non-jury docket with the defendant's demand for jury outstanding? Could they have written, said, we'd want this set on the non-jury docket?
Yes, they could have, Your Honor. I think the appropriate procedure would have been to file immediately a motion to quash the defendant's jury demand. Now, Justice Cornyn and Justice Spector, coming from Bexar County, know that we have two dockets in Bexar County. We have a jury docket and we have a non-jury docket. And those dockets are run concurrently. So you can place a case on a jury docket, you can place a case on a non-jury docket. And in this case, the trial setting that was filed on the jury docket. So it would have been appropriate if River Center intended to rely on their right to their alleged right to a non-jury determination of this matter, it would have been appropriate then for them to immediately file a motion to quash the jury demand. I will point out to the court, and this is important, this motion to quash the jury demand was not filed until after our request for a jury had been on file 30 days, and this action has been pending 7 months. At no time after that jury request was filed by River Center did they ever file any type of motion to withdraw their case from the jury demand, to withdraw their case from the jury docket, or to in any way retract the jury demand that they had already filed.
Well, my question, I guess is this. They, in the face of your outstanding demand for a jury,
yes, sir.
I didn't understand your answer. They could have requested a setting on the non-jury docket.
Yes, sir. The appropriate motion would have been a motion to quash and for trial setting on the non-jury.
Well, then the answer is they could not have set it on the non-jury docket but for quashing the defendant's jury demand.
And the appropriate motion, well, I believe that motion to quash the jury demand would have been filed on the jury monitoring court.
Okay.
Counsel, are you
What would have prevented them from saying, well, this demand's out there for a jury? I either have a choice of quashing the jury demand and getting a different setting, or going ahead and requesting that we be set for trial on a jury day and walk in and assert my right under the contract to be tried before the judge, and we just cancel the jury. Why couldn't they, fully protecting their rights, walk in on the jury day, which happened to me when I was a trial judge, and the parties walk in and say on the jury day, judge, we're going to try this before you, and we just cancel the jury. Why the fact that you're already in the works for a jury day, why go to the trouble of having a motion to quash and a hearing to quash? You got the contract, just go ahead and say, judge, go ahead and set it for a day for the jury based on their demand, and walk in on the day that's there and say, judge, our contract says we do this without a jury. Let's proceed without a jury. Why can't they do that?
Well, Justice Enos, that's probably a question that is better directed to River Center, because they're the parties that filed their own motion to quash. And once they filed that motion to quash, there was a determination of whether or not this action should proceed by jury or non-jury. That was the determination for the trial court to make. What they did, inconsistent with the scenario or the hypothetical that you have tendered, is that they filed their own request for a trial setting on the jury docket. So they took action inconsistent with the right that they are asserting now, and that is a right to a non-jury determination of this issue.
Counsel, if I hear you correctly, you seem to be conceding the issue that Justice Doggett was vitally concerned about, and that is whether or not you can contractually waive your right to a jury trial. Are you conceding that you can contractually waive your right to a jury trial, and that the parties did so here, but that the other side acquiesced in the jury trial and waived its right to a non-jury trial?
Absolutely.
Or are you saying, if we determined that you can waive your right to a jury trial by contract, that they waive it?
We are absolutely not conceding that there is that the right to waive your. We're not conceding that the parties may waive their right to a jury in any action in Texas.
If you had agreed to arbitrate, that's enforceable in Texas, isn't it?
And you can waive your right to arbitrate by taking actions in the trial court.
Well, my question is, if you agree to arbitrate, that includes a waiver of a right to jury.
That's right. Yes, sir.
If that's enforceable, why wouldn't the waiver of a jury trial be enforceable?
Your Honor, I don't think we get to that issue in this case. I don't think this case is about the propriety of jury waivers. The right to contractually waive your right to a jury. I don't think we get to that. The issue before the court is a very narrow issue, and that is, did Judge Rivera, did the trial court abuse its discretion in denying this motion to quash?
But if we pass over that issue, though, if we
Yes, sir.
If we answer that unfavorably to your position, then we do get to the validity of the trial.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
And so what is the answer to Anglin?
The answer to Anglin is that while you can waive your right to a jury when you have contracted for arbitration, that right must be knowledgeably and intelligently waived. And in this case, there is no evidence that, and I think that the burden is on the relator here to present it, because it's seeking mandamus relief to show that it is clearly entitled to proceed without a jury.
If there were evidence, would the waiver be valid?
Well, I think that we have to go the second step. If the first issue is, was the right knowingly and intelligently waived? Then secondly, does it apply to Robbins in this case? The argument has been made that Robbins and All Assure are the same parties, that this contract, that the surety and the lease are one document, that they should be construed together, and that is just not right. We
Do you have a further issue as to whether these kind of waiver provisions, you refer to them as unenforceable in your first response, whether they are contrary to public policy, in view of the constitutional right that you reference in your brief, whether a waiver of the right to trial by jury is, even though it might be put in a contract, is a provision that's contrary to public policy?
Yes, sir. That's the position that we've taken, and that's the position that my co-counsel is going to argue the substantive issues before the court. I think that the while River Center would like to present this as a straight enforcement of contract action, a straight enforcement of the contractual waiver provisions here, I don't think that it's that at all. I think that the issue that the court is looking at is, did Judge Rivera abuse his discretion in denying a jury here? The flip side of that...
I'm still trying to understand, though,
yes,
that if we get over that issue...
Yes, sir.
I need to know your position on, is a knowing waiver, contractual waiver of a right to a jury trial, valid in your view?
Judge, I think that there are public policy reasons that we have asserted in our brief that prevent a party from waiving a jury unless that waiver is knowing, unless it's done intelligently, and I don't think you have those facts before you.
I'm asking you if it was knowing and intelligent. If that were true in this case, or some other case, is it your position that a knowing waiver of right to jury in a contract is valid or not?
I think you decided that case in Anglin when you said if you agree to arbitration and you agree to have your dispute arbitrated, then you waive your right to a jury. And if you can do it by arbitration, then I think that same concept extends to these types of agreements. But there has to be a knowing and intelligent waiver of this fundamental right that you have. And I don't think you have the evidence in this case to justify that.
If the waiver was in red, bold-faced print at the top of the document, would that be a knowing and intelligent waiver?
I think that would lend some, that is the type of evidence that the courts have traditionally looked at when you are assessing whether or not there's been a valid waiver. Is the language clear? Is it highlighted? Is it in a type of point that makes it stand out from other from other provisions in the lease? Does it stand out? Is it there so that a party...
You are agreeing that you can waive.
Pardon me?
You are agreeing that a waiver can be made in a contract.
In a commercial lease such as this.
You are agreeing that that is true.
I'm agreeing that if there is a knowing and intelligent waiver, that is a provision that
you can... That doesn't violate any constitutional privileges.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask one. If the court were to decide that the difference between a jury trial and non-jury trial is not burdensome enough to justify mandamus, that is, interfering with the trial court's normal procedure, do you believe that you could successfully urge harmless error on an appeal, or with this type of error, that is, giving somebody a jury trial if they weren't supposed to have a jury trial, if we ultimately decided that's automatically harmful error? My question really goes to the first question that I asked your opposing counsel. Is this the type of error that needs to be corrected by mandamus because it could not be cured on appeal?
I understand your question. No, I don't think so. I think that there are two determinations. The first is the factual determination of whether or not that right was waived by the actions that they took, which are inconsistent.
Well, I'm not getting to all that. I'm getting to everything else. Let's just say this is not so bad. What the trial judge did wasn't so bad that this error can't wait until appeal. All right. Then if on appeal an appellate court decided there was a knowing, they didn't wait, they knew it at the time and nobody's conduct waived it later, would this be subject to a harmless error analysis, or is this kind of an automatic error like we held a few weeks ago in McConnell when you violate a summary judgment rule? It's an automatic error.
Judge, I think I think the courts do this all the time. You review a case, and if there is harmful error, then you send it back.
But is this automatically harmful error, or would we have to read the whole record and say, well, yeah, it was clear, your side was going to win anyway, any trial judge would have thought this, or is this kind of, or would this be automatic harmful error?
I don't think that it would be automatic harmful error. I think that you would have to review the record to make a determination of whether or not there was harm.
Aren't there really four questions that we have to address here, and they're all contingency questions, and the first one being whether or not River City acquiesced in the jury trial.
Yes, sir. I believe
if we find that they acquiesced in the jury trial, we don't have to go any further. We don't have to reach anything else. If we said they didn't acquiesce in the jury trial, then we have to determine whether you can contractually waive a jury trial.
Yes, Your
Honor. If we find that you can, then we have to reach the question of whether or not the trial judge abused discretion. And if we say the trial judge did abuse discretion, then we reach the question of whether there's any harm or not.
Yes, Your
right?
Honor.
So there's really four questions. Now, I've got one fundamental question I want to ask you, and then I assume your co-counsel is going to talk sometime.
Yes.
If the right to a jury, the fundamental right to a jury under our state constitution, which says right to a jury is inviolate. If you can bargain that away, what right can you not bargain away? Can you bargain yourself into some kind of uncompensated servitude?
Judge Gamage, I think that issue is the focus of this proceeding today. If in a commercial lease like this one, you are alleged to have waived the significant fundamental rights you have, then the onus should be on the party who is asserting that waiver to show that it was done in a way that is consistent with the waiver of fundamental rights that the other types of cases where the courts have set out the standards that one must follow in order to secure the waiver of such a valuable right. And I don't think that evidence is before the court.
I just wondered what quid pro quo is adequate for bargaining away a fundamental constitutional right.
Well, you have to have a lease that was done that was fairly transacted, where both sides are represented by counsel, and in the arbitration context, where you have in a commercial context, where you have both sides represented by
knowingly,
counsel,
consciously, intentionally,
exactly,
and intelligently at arm's length bargaining, so that it probably wouldn't apply to an insurance policy. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I would say that insurance contracts normally aren't negotiated like that. A consumer doesn't come to the insurance company with counsel, and these provisions aren't negotiated.
I see your green light is on. How are y'all splitting your time?
We had intended to split it 10 minutes each.
Are any further questions? Thank you, counsel. I gather your positions are not entirely coextensive.
My name is Jake, and I represent the real parties and interests, Les Robbins and River Center. And my position is this, is our Constitution in the Bill of Rights provides that this jury trial is inviolate. And it says the only abrogation of that inviolation is the legislature. The legislature has acted in arbitration cases and has set forth the acknowledgement of that. But the legislature and the right of a trial by jury has enacted only two statutes or two rules, and those are rules 216 and 220. And each of those provides for a waiver, but neither one of those provides a waiver of a pre-contractual waiver.
How do you explain that?
I don't explain that because it's up to the legislature to act.
Legislature can violate the Constitution.
No, the legislature, it says right here, the right of trial by jury shall remain inviolate. Excuse me. The legislature shall pass such laws as may be needed to regulate the same and maintain its purity and efficiency. What we're talking about here is the legislature has not carved something out of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code, as has the state of Massachusetts, in the state of New York, in the state of California, which limit these contractual waivers. What you're doing is you're affecting the Bill of Rights. This is the most...
Well, regarding the Bill of Rights, you can waive your right against self-determination.
You can after representation of attorney, and you can waive your right to soldier people in your homes, and
But you can't waive your right to a jury trial.
Not in this state. My position is that is totally unenforceable against public policy because the legislature in the articles has the right.
In what areas? You said in two areas. Arbitration is one of the areas the legislature's addressing.
It's where it's gone in staffing. The second way is under the rules. If you don't timely pay your fee, you don't make a demand, or Rule 220 says if you don't show up, you've waived it.
What about a whole harmless agreement? Whereby the entire burden of the judgment may be transferred from one party to another without, by operation of a contractual provision, without any kind of jury or anything.
That doesn't affect a constitutional right. We're talking about a constitutional right, and the thing that everybody needs to understand is this is a breach of contract case. My client has repudiated the contract. Their whole deal is the whole contract is unenforceable.
That's true in arbitration cases.
Well, if you repudiate, and this court in Lacey held that you have a right to repudiate an executory contract, and if you do, your remedy lies in damages, not mandamus. What they're asking this court to do is take one clause of a contract and force this court to be the fact finder and impose that obligation on a party who's now before a judge saying, we believe this whole contract to be enforceable. What keeps them from bringing a provision under a damage provision and forcing this court to say, you agreed in writing to this contract, these damages have to apply.
That same argument could be made with respect to every contract with an arbitration clause.
It can be made, but see, arbitration is by statute, Your Honor, and that's where the legislature has the right to act under the Bill of Rights.
And counsel, let me ask you then, do I gather that your comments are a little in conflict with the argument we just heard? The fact that it's conspicuous or knowing does not necessarily mean that the Constitution ends at that point.
No, sir, I do not believe it. We are in slight disagreement in that I think that public policy forbids these things from the get-go because you're going to see them.
Trial court?
Excuse me?
Did you assert, Judge Rivera, that this is unenforceable because it voids against public policy?
If the truth be known, our hearing lasted about 25 seconds. I didn't even get a chance to talk. My client was there prepared to testify onto all these different issues. It's not conspicuous. It's going to be found in every contract in this state as soon as this court rules.
Did you say in any written pleading or any written document? I understand that your hearing was didn't take very long.
Yes, Your Honor.
But and you may not have had a chance to say everything you wanted to say, but is there any reference to avoiding a public policy in any document or any transcript?
Other than the allegations that the contract was procured by fraud, which is in defense, as well as misrepresentations were made to induce us into the contract. To me, that puts the whole contract in issue, and for them to take one little part of that contract out and now try to enforce it against us, seems to me that this court sitting here waiting for mandamus hearings on different parts of contracts to be forced to
get
down to
the court. Let me make sure I understand your basic position. There's two people with equal bargaining power say, we may have a dispute, but we want to get this resolved quickly. They can say, we can arbitrate, and we'll agree to be bound by arbitration. But if they say, well, this may be a real, interpreting this contract may be a real sticky point, and we might want the right to get the Supreme Court of Texas to look at it someday, they can't say, we want a non-jury trial so that we can get an initial resolution of what basically is going to be a law point in 45 days, and we'll agree to that in advance, and then we can get it on into the appellate system. That's just something that you're constitutionally protected from being allowed to do.
Unless the legislature says contrary, because for this court to rule that the Bill of Rights says that is judicial activism and not judicial restraint. This is the court here that is supposed to uphold the Constitution, uphold the Bill of Rights, and protect those. And for this court to now take that language and make more of that language than it actually says, is this court going on the road to judicial activism. And we request that the writ of mandamus be denied.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court. Several points I want to address as quickly as possible. Number one, did the plaintiff, River Center Associates, acquiesce? No. We could not have set this case on a non-jury docket without setting aside the jury demand. Period.
But you could have made a motion. You could have made a motion. I mean, you didn't have to put this.
We filed a notice. You got to remember, it may say motion on top of it, but you call it what it is. In Bexar County, all that is a notice. It's not a motion. You don't have a hearing. You don't go in and ask for
order. But it was generated by your counsel.
I generated it. No doubt. I entitled that motion to set on jury. But you got to also remember, we're the plaintiff. If we don't set the case on trial, we risk being dismissed for wrongful prosecution.
You could literally strike the jury setting at that point, couldn't you?
The jury demand.
The jury demand.
Once the case was set and we had an April setting, then we knew that we had enough time to bring a motion to quash without prejudicing any of the parties. You've got to remember, the motion to quash was brought more than 8 months before the trial set.
But I mean, if the whole purpose of this is to get a quicker trial, I can't see acquiescing in their paying the jury fee. Why didn't you immediately move strike that and get it on the quicker docket, which was the underlying purpose?
Well, that's their interpretation of the language wherein we state that the jury demand had already been paid. I don't call that acquiescence. I call that a statement of fact. We didn't acquiesce in that.
The jury fee has been paid and we want a setting. That's not acquiescence?
No, sir. I don't believe so, not in light of the fact that we brought our motion to quash in a timely fashion at least 8 months prior to the jury trial.
Well, in view of it, isn't it at least correct to say that the trial judge didn't abuse his discretion?
I disagree. I think when you interpret that as just simply as a notice of the setting for a resolution of the trial on the merits, which is all that was, that he did in fact abuse his discretion, there was no fact issue presented to the judge. Facts presented to the judge were the proving, we proved up the contract. We proved up the contract was negotiated at arm's length. There was no evidence supplied by the opposition that he did not know what he was doing, that he did not read that provision. You got to remember, in contract law, when you sign something, you're presumed to have read it.
Let's go back to constitutional law for a minute. You pointed out earlier that some states have provisions similar to us regarding the inviolate nature of the right to a jury trial, including the state of Massachusetts. And the state of Massachusetts has recognized this contractual waiver. Did they do so judicially or legislatively?
I believe it was judicially, but I don't know that for a fact.
Do they have language similar to Texas that addresses, as opposing counsel did mention a moment ago, addresses the legislature's function and role in regulating that?
I have not read that specific constitutional provision. I've only read the the language in the court decision, which quoted a very short part of the constitution.
There's additional qualifying language as to who can address it, though.
Well,
wouldn't you say?
There may very well be, but we got to remember, in this state, we recognize common law arbitration, and that waives a right to a jury trial just as much as statutory arbitration.
What case was that?
I don't have it. I've cited it. The common law arbitration case cited in our brief.
That's not the decision in Anglin. Anglin turned on statute, didn't it?
Well, it really didn't. It determined that it was a federal statute, and federal procedures may have applied,
right.
But you guys didn't apply federal procedures. So you were left, really, to decide, I think, whether or not common law arbitration in Texas.
The fact that a federal statute was involved is another difference between Anglin and this case, where there's no federal statute overriding the Texas Constitution.
I don't think so, although there's footnote 14 in there, and I can't tell you what footnote 14 means in that decision. It seems to be a speculation from the court that the U.S. Supreme Court would grant a mandamus regardless.
There were admissions served in this case?
The admissions?
Request for admissions?
That's correct.
And is it your position that there are any questions of fact to be decided by a fact finder in the trial court?
On this issue, there is no...
No, I'm sorry, not on this issue. I mean on the merits of the underlying case.
On the underlying case, possibly for group, well, yeah, damages for breach of contract.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments in the foregoing clauses. They are submitted upon briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will now please adjourn the court.
The audience will please rise. OEA, OEA, OEA. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned, subject to call.